Hello and welcome. You are listening to Gore and Guilty Podcast. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Greg.
And this week, Greg will be leading the episode. I believe we're going to be talking about Bruce MacArthur, which I don't actually know very much about. Greg was going to do this episode a long time ago and I didn't look at anything and I still haven't. So I'm intrigued to know what it's all about. So Greg, what is this case about?
Well, hopefully I'll do this case justice, as you haven't read about it before, read too much about it. It's a really, really tragic case about a serial killer in Canada that specifically targeted vulnerable gay victims. And yeah, there's so much to this case, and we're going to do really well to fit as much as I want to within an hour, because it's the sort of case where you could do a whole documentary series on it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But we're going to try, and we're going to try and wrap it up in an hour, and we'll see how we go.
Sounds good.
But before we do that, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I know I say that every week. I'm not leading a very exciting life at the moment. I suppose it's winter. I'm bogged down with uni work. Gore and Guilty's keeping me going. I'm pretty well. Pretty standard week, really. How about you? How are you?
I think people should understand, to be fair, that the podcast and the full-time jobs and uni degrees mean that we aren't left with too much time to go and actually do super entertaining things to talk about in the podcast, which is
exactly
kind of ironic. But then if we had loads of things to talk about, we'd never get into the cases. Hey, so maybe it's
very
a good thing.
Very true.
What's new with me? How am I? I'm good. Yeah. Same as you. Same as every week. I have also not been up to too much. I'm going to Tenerife soon. Or actually, when this episode is published, I'll be back from Tenerife.
Yeah, that's so exciting. I'm so jealous.
Yeah, I'll have time travelled. one thing that's kind of interesting. I have a couple of shops that are very local to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I normally go to this one because the shopkeeper is really cool.
Oh, nice.
And every time I go in there, he's like, hello, my brother. Hey. And I'm like, nice, that's cool. And the other shop I normally only go to when I really need some fruit or some like fresh veg, because that's like, it's almost like a greengrocer.
Oh, nice, yeah.
But the guy that works there is like a very grumpy man.
Oh, no.
He always just scowls at me. But today I went in because I needed some tomatoes for my tomatoes for my dinner. Tomatoes. And we had a bit of back and forth about baklava, you know, the kind of the Turkish.
I do. I'm really not a fan of baklava.
Slander. It is so good. How can you not be a fan? It's unreal.
Oh, no. I have quite a big hate for baklava. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
Oh, what? It's so good. I could eat so much of it.
It's the one with all the, it's like the layers, right? With the honey and like
pistachio honey, cinnamon. Oh, it's so good.
Absolutely.
I bought
not.
Two pieces. Mm-hmm. The guy has just like a counter. Like a 2 meter wide counter just full of baklava or baklava, how is it?
Really?
Yeah. And wow. Like loads of different types. And you can only pay with cash there, which is weird nowadays because who pays with cash in 2022?
Yeah, it's not really common.
And I had £1 extra after I paid for my tomatoes. So I was like, how much? He doesn't speak like great English. So I was like, how much for the baklava? And he was like, 50p a slice.
Yeah.
And then I took ages to decide, like, because he has all these different types. But he was loving it. He was
loving
my enthusiasm for his delicacy. So maybe I'll go there more often now. Maybe we're friends.
Yeah. Maybe he just wanted to talk to someone about that.
Very possibly.
That's why he was so grumpy. I just remember when I was a kid, my gran bought us a load of baklava, and I really didn't have a sweet tooth. I don't really have too much of one now, but as a kid, I wasn't really into that. And I had to eat so much baklava, and it's so sweet that you just like, It just, I don't know. It was too much, and it's put me off life.
You had to eat it.
I, like, it's my
you
one
were forced
thing.
To eat baklava.
No. No, she bought it as like a present, and like I think I can't remember where she got it from, but it was like a really big treat. And then I felt, and there were massive slices, and I was like, she's like, oh, you got to try it. And I, you know, that awkward thing of like, I've got to eat this now. I don't want her to feel bad. And yeah, oh, put off for life. It's the only thing that, yeah, I have strong feelings against.
That is so funny. To be fair, the slices I had were very, very small, and they left me wanting more. So maybe you've like force-fed yourself a big slice of baklava, and you've just ruined it for yourself forever now.
It's my
fault,
really.
A grand shame, because it is truly delicious. Impossibly the bizarrest twist or change of topics. Should we start talking about the useful garfer now? Let's do it.
Yeah,
put the baklava to one side. In this week's episode, we're going to talk about one of the most prolific serial killers of gay men in recent history, Bruce MacArthur. You could easily mistake MacArthur as being a friendly gardener and festive mall Santa. Yet, across 7 years, Bruce MacArthur killed 8 men in Toronto, Canada. Oh. This is a massive, massive case, because there are so many different offsprings to it. And like I said at the beginning, I've tried desperately to condense what I see as the really key parts into an hour. But even then, I'm questioning how effective I've been at that, but we'll see how we get on. And there are also massive questions about the police's handling of this case. There are question marks on whether MacArthur should have been identified earlier, plus loads more facets that involve potential racism from the police department in how they handled the crimes. And also just a lot of disturbing facts about this case.
Oh gosh, okay.
So when I was deciding how to approach it, I wanted to talk more about how the victims were failed. Failed by the police, and arguably failed by wider society. And how crimes against queer people of colour are not given the equal attention they deserve. I'll still talk about Bruce MacArthur, just so listeners get at least some context on this guy. But we're not going to do a deep dive on his background, even though we really could. We could spend the whole hour or whatever just talking about how this guy turned into the serial killer. Or maybe not even turned into, but was this serial killer.
Interesting. Okay.
So ironically, we're going to just start with Bruce, even though I said we're not going to talk about him that much, but it is a natural starting point.
Yeah.
Bruce MacArthur was born in 1951. To a reputable family in Ontario, where he was raised on a farm. His family often fostered troubled children from Ontario. MacArthur's parents had a religious background. His mother was Irish Catholic, and his father was a Scottish Presbyterian.
Mm.
MacArthur himself was gay, and had difficulty accepting his sexual orientation, which would have been viewed as abnormal in rural Ontario. Despite being gay, MacArthur began dating Janice Campbell during secondary school, and they married when he was 23.
Oh, okay.
Which you hear quite a lot, don't you?
Yeah, you do, and it's so terribly sad.
That would be around the mid-70s when they got married, when he was 23.
Okay.
By 1981, both of MacArthur's parents had passed away, and he had 2 children. At about the same time, like early 80s, Bruce MacArthur became very active in the church, which it's assumed was probably a way for him to distract himself from confronting his true sexuality.
Mm.
Eventually, Bruce began having affairs with men in the early 90s, before coming out to his wife. As a slightly bizarre... This is actually really bizarre. So as a bizarre tangent, MacArthur's son, Todd, began his long legal issues in the early 90s at about the same time, because he was making incessant sexual calls to women that he'd never met before.
Wait, what?
And apparently, yeah, so this is Bruce MacArthur's son, has like a long history of calling women...
On the phone?
...that don't know him, on the phone, on the telephone, and just being extremely crude and sexual.
Ooh.
Even though they've never met.
Oh, that's really creepy.
That's super creepy. And this guy, genuinely, this started in the 90s and he's still getting in trouble for it now.
Oh, so it's like a compulsive sort of behaviour where... Oh, that would be terribly creepy. Getting a phone call from a random person saying, like, disgusting things down the phone to you.
Yep.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, and he's been arrested and prosecuted for it several times and just seems like he won't stop.
Can't stop. Ugh, that is gross.
Bruce eventually separated from his wife in 1997 and he moved to Toronto. He would go to gay bars in Toronto's gay village. It was also around this time that Bruce MacArthur began his career as a landscaper, which is important for later. But that's all we're going through on MacArthur's life events that don't have a direct impact on his crimes. And that's actually way less than I expected. I thought that was going to be a lot longer.
Okay, that's all good, that's all good. Okay, so we've got a little bit of backstory. He's moved to Canada, Toronto, and he's now living... Well, he's divorced his wife. He's now living his true self as a gay man in...
Correct. Yeah, he's now living as an openly gay man. So let's start discussing some of the criminal actions that Bruce was taking. And as far as we're aware, they began in 2001, just after MacArthur turned 50.
Okay. 2001,
yeah.
It seems so much more recent than I thought it was, this story. Well, this case.
The case is recent. This is just the first... crime that is like very much public knowledge.
I thought this was from a lot later. I feel like 2001 is quite recent, really.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So just after MacArthur turned 50 in 2001, so an actor and model, Mark Henderson, invited MacArthur to his apartment to see his Halloween costume. MacArthur ended up bludgeoning Mark Henderson from behind several times.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was...
sudden. Brutal.
Very brutal. Literally a sucker punch from behind with a heavy weapon. Fortunately, Henderson survived the attack and called 911 after fighting back.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty intense scene, and I've included some quotes in a second from Mark Henderson about that situation. But before I say those quotes, interestingly, MacArthur handed himself into police straight away after the incident.
Ooh, interesting. I'm surprised about that.
Yeah, so he's bludgeoned Mark Henderson and left him in a bloody mess. And he's just gone straight to the police and handed himself in.
Okay.
When recalling the attack, Mark Henderson had some interesting things to say. One was this quote. "It was a devastating experience. I fought for my life, and in the various reports it says that I went unconscious. I can tell you that I never once went unconscious. Like, I was conscious the whole time. It wasn't until the ambulance got there that I began to panic."
Oh my god.
And a slightly separate quote, but a quote from Mark Henderson all the same. "As soon as he hit me, he went to the police headquarters and said, 'I hit Mark Henderson.' So he was no longer under investigation, and he was just charged while I was in the emergency room. It meant they didn't have to interview me." And that's particularly interesting because Bruce MacArthur never actually saw jail time for this incident.
What? What? What?
Yep.
How? I mean, a horrific crime's happened. He's handed himself in. The police know who did this crime. Mark Henderson can also confirm this. Like, case closed, right? He should serve time.
Well, yeah, it's interesting you say that. It sounds like they never even really spoke to Mark Henderson about the crime.
Really?
Because, yeah, from their perspective... Bruce MacArthur was already in detention and he'd already confessed to everything from their perspective.
But I thought that was just basic practice, where you go and talk to the victim, just to corroborate the story.
Yeah, you'd think so, but it seemed like it was almost as if they felt Bruce was being honest, and therefore they decided, they did charge him.
Mm-hmm.
They did charge him, but he pled guilty to the charges of assault with a weapon and assault causing bodily harm. And actually, in fairness, the Crown Attorney did want MacArthur to see jail time.
Yeah.
But there was a psychiatric report that was done on MacArthur, and that report suggested that he was at a low risk of reoffending.
Oh, right, okay. That's what? Because, like, the whole crime seemed so sudden, like, it just came out of nowhere. And it's so brutal.
Yeah, I think it was attributed to a combination of some medication that MacArthur was on and mixed with some recreational drugs
right.
that are often used before gay men have sex.
Okay.
Right. So they kind of blamed it on that, or he blamed it on that or something. But I think clearly completely wrong that this happened, that he was let to get away without jail time. But I think him going straight to the police station and just being like, hey, I actually just blacked out and hit this guy over the head.
Yeah.
Must have garnered him some favour, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I think as we know that he goes on to killing more people, you know, after this, it just seems so frustrating that there wasn't a punishment for the crime that he committed, that he got away with it, technically. I know he was charged, but he didn't.
I did, really.
He didn't get any punishment.
Yeah, if it wasn't such a tragic case, the psychiatric report saying this guy's unlikely to offend again is almost laughable.
Yeah.
Because he's not only offended again, he's taken it to, and we'll get into this, of course, some extremely violent cases.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of jail, MacArthur spent the first year of his sentence under house arrest. Then he had a 6-month curfew, and then a further 3 years of probation. There's an indication that the legal system already suspected that MacArthur was a threat to others in the gay community. This is because they handed him an unorthodox set of conditions with his sentence. These included MacArthur being barred from the gay village, MacArthur having to stay away from his victim's home and workplace, and MacArthur also was forbidden from spending time with male prostitutes.
Okay.
Yeah, which, I mean, some of those make more sense than others, like, or sound more common, you know, not being able to visit his victim's home. Yeah, fair enough, but being barred from the entire gay village kind of indicates that they felt, hey, this guy's a threat to gay people.
Yeah, I would say so. Interesting.
Yeah. And even more frustratingly, the oversight of MacArthur's propensity to reoffend allowed him to get the attack expunged from his record in 2014.
Really?
It meant that a criminal background check on Bruce MacArthur wouldn't pull up the attack.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That doesn't sit right.
No, it definitely doesn't. And it gets kind of worse because when that record was expunged from his criminal history, which is something that he pursued, Bruce was already a killer.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right, yeah.
In 2010, Skandaraj Navaratnam, also known as Skanda, went missing after leaving a bar in Toronto. MacArthur had killed Skanda around September the 6th, 2010. And currently, Skanda is MacArthur's first known victim. Skanda was described by his friend Kevin Nash as a handsome young man with a charismatic attitude. And another friend said how Skanda would do anything for anybody if they ever needed his help.
Oh, so sad.
It was very sad, actually, listening to some details about these victims. It didn't take long for Bruce to kill again. On December 29th, 2010, Abdul Basir Faitsi, was reported missing by his wife. His car was found abandoned in Toronto. He was killed by Bruce on or around the same day that he went missing. A relative that talks about Abdul-Basir said about how devastated his kids and wife were to find out what happened. Mm. Also, because there's a double effect here. Like, again, I'll talk about this more, but Bruce MacArthur's type was generally immigrants to Canada who seemed to be generally closeted.
Right.
You know, Abdul-Basir had a wife, so his wife has had to deal with not only the knowledge of her husband's tragic and violent death, but also had to comprehend that she has been in a relationship with a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's just, yeah, it's so sad. It just adds an extra layer of difficulty to explain this all.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to explain that to family is probably a really difficult thing to do. Around 2 years later, Majid Kayan, an immigrant from Afghanistan, was reported missing by his son. Majid was a big lover of Bollywood movies and their songs, according to a friend.
Hmm.
And Bruce had killed Majid in mid-October 2012. So as you can see, this guy's really got a type, and he's not slowing down.
No, I mean, his first one was in 2010, well, the one that's known, and this is 2012, he's already killed a few people. Hmm.
So Skander's disappearance, the first victim, led to the inception of a task force called Project Houston. There was a belief that Skander had been murdered, but they had no leads. Supposedly, the task force was set up when a user on a cannibalism website claimed to have killed and eaten a man in Toronto.
Oh my gosh.
The task force investigated a link between Skander's murder and convicted killer Luca Magnotta. Luca Magnotta. But the lead was abandoned.
Oh my gosh.
You are
don't
familiar.
Don't kill cats.
Yeah. Oh, don't fuck with cats, right?
Don't fuck with cats. That's it. Not don't kill cats. Yeah.
Well, so, both one's a good rule for life. Well, they're both good rules for life, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, he's awful. We might have to cover him at some point. But that's such an interesting case.
Yeah, that's also a big case. It seems like a few cases of serial killers going on in Canada around this time, actually.
Interesting. Although, yeah.
Was Luca Magnotta a serial killer, or was he just an animal abuser and then he was a killer as well?
I think, I know one for sure, the Ice Pick
Murder. Yeah, he definitely
killed
one guy.
And then would film himself abusing animals online. But I don't remember there being any more, but I may be wrong. I just vividly remember the Ice Pick Murder, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is a really shocking case.
Yeah.
Project Houston identified Bruce's two other known victims that we've mentioned already as similar cases to Skander. All three men were middle-aged immigrants of South Asian origin. And they all disappeared from the same area in Toronto too. And there's kind of a... Do you remember when we talked about Stephen Port?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Same sort of thing where they noticed, or they should have noticed in the Stephen Port case, that a lot of guys with similar characteristics. Yeah, as a pattern emerging.
There's a pattern forming and maybe should have been picked up sooner, potentially. Or at least raised awareness for people in the area.
Yes, that's a good point. It's should they have been making it clearer that there's a potential threat out there? Well, at least in this case, they actually recognised that these people had gone missing and there was potentially a link, whereas in the Stephen Port case, they just kind of buried their heads in the sand.
Hmm.
There was even an anonymous tip that linked MacArthur to two of his victims, Skander and Majid. This meant that police interviewed MacArthur in late 2013.
Really?
Yeah.
I hate it when there's cases where serial killer is interviewed and like, if only they knew that they've got them. That's who it is. And then they're let off and they get, you know, they get on with their day and it's like, oh, so close.
It never seems to slow them down either. It never seems to put them off killing.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know whether it gives them a bit more of a sense of power of, I was right in front of them, under their noses, and they didn't realise. Therefore, I can continue and get away with it.
Yeah, very possibly. That wouldn't surprise me. Police treated MacArthur as a witness rather than as a suspect. And when they interviewed MacArthur, he dismissed claims that he had a relationship with Skander, although he did concede that he knew Majid. This meant that despite interviewing the killer of all three men, the Project Houston task force closed in 2014 with no evidence to link the disappearances and no evidence that a crime had been committed and there were no suspects.
Oh my gosh. So had they found the bodies of the victims at this point?
Nope.
So they're just missing, haven't heard from them since the day that they went, and that's sort of it. Other than,
yeah,
there potentially precisely might be a connection, but we can't prove that there is.
Yeah, all they knew was that there were three men of similar characteristics that had gone missing from about the same place in Toronto.
Okay.
But people were saying, you know, there's potentially something going on here.
Yeah.
And I've realised now, actually, as I look back on my notes, that maybe being interviewed by the police did slow MacArthur down, because he killed three people across 2010 to 2012 and then was spoken to as part of Project Houston. But he didn't murder again until August 2015.
That is interesting, especially with 2014 being the year he decides to get rid of that, the little thing on his record saying that he bludgeoned, basically, the first victim.
That's a really good point, actually. Maybe that was his thinking when they were going to interview him. Maybe he was like, oh my God, if they check my records, they're going to see.
So it seemed like he was cleaning up his self-appearance, basically, during that time after that investigation or that interview with the police, cleaned it all up and then began it again.
Yeah, almost like getting himself ready or cleaning, like you say, cleaning his record so that he feels that there's less chance he'll be caught. So yeah, in August 2015, Sorush Mahmoudi, an Iranian immigrant, was reported missing by his wife. He was killed by Bruce on or around August 15th, 2015. A former co-worker described the news as truly devastating.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
In January 2016, Bruce kills again. This time it's his youngest victim, 37-year-old Kirush Nakumar Kanagaratnam. He was a Sri Lankan refugee who actually was never reported missing formally, which is super sad.
That's so sad. Oh.
He'd arrived in Canada after spending 6 weeks on a dilapidated cargo vessel travelling from Thailand. His family had been actively searching for him via Facebook and social media, though.
Oh, that's super sad.
Awful to think about, to go through one of the most arduous journeys.
Yeah.
Try and start again, and being almost the hope of your family, to then be killed. A friend who travelled with Kirush Nakumar from Thailand said how they only had 7 litres of water to last them for 37 days of travelling.
37 days?
Yeah, 37 days. That's like, what, 1 litre every 5 days?
Oh my gosh.
The friend described how Kirush Nakumar was the only one of their group who was generous with their water and gave it to others in need.
Aww.
And this is a really sad moment in this case, because at this point, early 2016, there are five missing gay men of colour and no one of authority is really looking for them.
Yeah.
And then another attack. This time, the victim survives. Bruce MacArthur is arrested after a man reports that MacArthur attempted to strangle him during a consensual sexual encounter. MacArthur again turns himself in straight away and is questioned. He's let go without charges.
Oh, what? That's bizarre behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand. Yeah, I just don't understand.
He must have been quite charismatic, I think.
He's just confident. Like, I suppose maybe he would look more guilty if he didn't turn himself in and the police came knocking. Or, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he just wanted to have full control over the whole situation. It worked before, so if I go and say what I did, they won't come knocking at my door and start snooping around my stuff. I don't know.
I think that's a good theory. I think that's, yeah, a good point, because it's worked before. He knows if he goes and he's upfront, he's not honest, he's lying. But if he goes and pretends he's being honest, and it's just like, hey, this has happened. You know, in this scenario, it was a consensual sexual encounter to begin with. Some more details in a second. But, you know, maybe he goes and says, oh, I accidentally scared this guy that I was sleeping with. And then suddenly the police on the back foot when they're talking to the other person, and it's maybe more difficult to get to the true core of what actually happened.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good form from the police at all, but you can see how he's quite a crafty and manipulative guy.
He's clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's quite shocking that they let him go without charging him, especially because, you know, Project Houston, you know, they think that they'd be aware of this potential threat of a serial killer.
And so at this point, he had had his record wiped as well.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't have been anything to go, oh, this guy's done something similar before, and then maybe may have made the connections.
Yeah.
But, oh, frustrating.
It does get a bit more alarming too, as the victim reported that the van was lined in plastic. And after MacArthur...
Oh, no.
Yeah, like kind of Dexter vibes. Jinx. Dexter vibes, yeah.
Hey!
the victim realised that the van was lined in plastic. And when MacArthur began to strangle his victim, the victim reportedly asked, what do you want from me? Why? Before, thankfully, he was able to escape from MacArthur's grasp.
Oh, so lucky.
Yeah. See, Bruce MacArthur was actually proper evil. And when I was writing my notes, I realised I found out a lot about MacArthur's victims, which we've talked through many of them already, and the facts that accompany the case. But some of the more graphic details reveal what a truly evil killer MacArthur was. These men didn't just go missing. They endured some of the most terrifying ends to their lives at the hands of MacArthur. Trigger warning. Bruce MacArthur had photographed many of his dead victims completely naked, apart from fur coats or hats. Which feels almost like an act of humiliation.
Yeah, playing with them.
One victim had tragically had his eyes taped open and was photographed that way.
Oh no.
Mm.
That's, yeah.
MacArthur had even shaved some of his victims' heads and beards and then kept the hair in Ziploc bags at a shed near the Toronto cemetery.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, that is actually really specific, I realise.
Yeah.
At this point, MacArthur has murdered 5 men in cold blood. He's talked his way out of 2 serious charges and he still continues to kill. Sadly, MacArthur's next victim was never reported missing. Dean Lisovich was remembered as a sweet guy who stuck up for other sex workers. Because he was never reported missing, police could only estimate when he was killed, believed to be sometime in 2016 or 2017.
Oh.
Yeah, it makes me so sad when people who go missing and no one looks for them.
Yeah, definitely. It's another layer of tragedy.
Mm-hmm. So that's victim number 6. Victim number 7 was killed in April 2017. Salim Essen had left Turkey for Canada in 2013, and his notebook was later found in MacArthur's apartment. MacArthur's final victim sparked the beginning of MacArthur's identification and eventual capture. Andrew Kinsman was reported missing on June 28, 2017. Andrew was an LGBTQ activist and had many friends in Toronto who quickly noticed that he was missing.
Oh, good.
And you may notice as well that that's dissimilar from some of MacArthur's other victims.
Mm. Yeah.
Who were often only reported, you know, days after by their wife or something else. His motivated friends gained access to his apartment. They found no signs of disturbance, but Andrew's 17-year-old cat was left there without food and water. Andrew had also left his prescription medicine behind.
Okay.
This made it clear to Andrew's friends and family that something was very wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
Good friends, like, to go and check up on him so soon and trying to make sure, like, to see what's going on.
Yeah, I think they're good people to not just sit on this and actually go and actively try and check he's okay themselves. And obviously the ending is tragic, but their motivation and their action has basically helped catch Bruce MacArthur in the end.
Definitely.
And they also seem to get the message through to police, who set up another task force, this time called Project Prism. The project was set up to investigate the disappearances of Andrew Kinsman and previous MacArthur victim Salim Essen. Early on, a link was formed to Project Houston, the previous task force. It was now that things started to come together to stop Bruce MacArthur. Andrew, his final murder victim, had marked Bruce in his calendar on the day that he went missing.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah. Video footage showed Andrew getting into a car that was traced back to MacArthur. This meant that police began keeping a very close surveillance on MacArthur, and they even secretly searched his apartment.
Really?
Yeah, and actually I kind of find it a bit weird that they kind of just tailed him for so long.
Can't they just...
put him under surveillance?
Yeah, I feel like they could have...
I guess they didn't have enough concrete evidence.
Yeah, and they didn't want to blow it completely if this was the guy.
Yeah, no bodies at this point. They didn't even know if any of the victims were dead.
Yeah.
I'm sure they had a good feeling, but or a bad feeling, I should say.
But they're just going off a car and a name on a calendar. So they got to be sure.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. MacArthur's eventual arrest feels like it's come from an episode of Criminal Minds or some other equally dramatic crime show.
Mm.
There was serious concern that Bruce had taken another victim back to his apartment. The victim, known only as John in the later court case, was similar to many of MacArthur's previous victims. He was an immigrant from the Middle East, and his family did not know he was gay. The victim and MacArthur had an ongoing affair. I believe they slept together multiple times previously.
Okay.
On a visit to MacArthur's apartment, the killer said he wanted to try something different, and he pulled out a pair of handcuffs. He chained the victim to his four-poster steel bed frame and put a black bag over his head.
Oh, no.
When the victim tried to remove the bag, MacArthur tried to tape his mouth shut. And just as he did, there was a knock at the door. It was the police, and the victim was safe.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it really does feel like a Criminal Minds episode, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean... if they'd been, you know, if they'd had multiple meetings together, and then this was the one where he decided to mix things up. God, if the police hadn't been tailing him, or the chances that they disturbed that moment, I just, oh, what a relief.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd been watching and surveilling, and putting Bruce MacArthur under surveillance. And then it was like, okay, we can't afford to take a chance. We're going to go and arrest him.
Yes.
And the investigation seemed to quickly turn up the evidence they needed. Police uncovered a USB with 9 folders. The first 8 folders were named after MacArthur's other victims. And the last folder had the same name as the victim that police found in his apartment.
No. So he definitely was next. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That is so, yeah, very dramatic.
That's eerie. So, really eerie.
Oh, haunting.
During MacArthur's trial, the prosecutor had to warn the court that the case may affect their mental health, as so many details were that morbid. One of the details I find particularly unsettling is how MacArthur disposed of his victims. Police eventually found them in garden planters at a home that MacArthur used as storage in exchange for doing landscaping. So he killed them and then buried them on properties where he was employed to do landscaping work.
You know what? I wonder, when you said you remember that he was a landscaper, I wondered, oh, the audacity. And like it just adds another element of like more families that are... It'd be devastating to know that your garden held, you know, it's a crime scene. It, just so tragic, so awful.
Yeah, it's easy to forget the circle of influence of these crimes. And you're right, that would have been an awfully unsettling situation for the people living at those homes to find themselves in.
Yeah, it is. It's just a larger web of people that have been brought into the horrific crimes of Bruce MacArthur.
And in the end, police had to check over 30 locations, actually, to find all of MacArthur's victims' bodies.
Oh, so unsettling.
Another unsettling detail that won't have come up in the trial, but I still find creepy, is that police have been looking into hundreds of missing persons cases to see if MacArthur could have been involved in those disappearances.
Yeah.
Because it would be weird for him to just start in the early 21st century.
No, it does. I mean, he was so, I don't know, he was so clever at what he did. And he got away with so many run-ins with the police. And even just that first assault was so brutal and it seemed so sudden and like out of character, like so extreme to start off that way. It makes you wonder, has there been other things before? And there seemed to be quite a large gap between the first assault and his first alleged murder. So what was he doing in between? I mean, it does beg the question of whether he did murder.
It definitely does. It definitely does. It seemed like he was a guy that had a very short fuse.
Yeah.
And it could have all come to light if they'd have taken that first case, or first known case, more seriously. At the end of his trial, Bruce MacArthur was sentenced to life in prison for killing and dismembering 8 men. And although it's a life in prison sentence, that does mean he can get parole after 25 years.
What?
When he'll be 92.
That seems so like so short, 25 years. Yeah. He took 8 lives, at least. That's... that doesn't seem
what do you
right.
think? Do you think they should...
He should
consider...
I would say he shouldn't ever leave jail. I always feel like the death penalty is always potentially like an easy way out for them. I want them to suffer and think about... I mean, some of them probably don't even think about what they've done, but I just would like the chance for them to just sit with their own thoughts spiralling. But I don't think he should be allowed out. Even at 91, he should not ever walk the earth again, really. Just stay in jail.
No, I agree. I think because he ended up pleading guilty, it meant that they gave him a little bit of flexibility. But like you say, you've killed 8 people and dismembered their bodies and buried them.
Yeah, and disrespected them and did some horrific things to them before they even were murdered. I mean, the abuse that, it goes on. He shouldn't be allowed out.
Yeah. Just before we end this case, there are some additional details that would be good to include. The police received a lot of flack for this case. Firstly, there was a perception of racism, as police only seemed to take the disappearances seriously after MacArthur killed Andrew Kinsman, the only white victim that was actually reported missing.
Okay. That is important to
note. What do you think about that?
Yeah. And was he the one that had people reporting that he was missing? The friends rallied round, right? Yeah, I think...
Yeah.
It does. I mean, it could have truth behind it. I don't know, but
yeah, I think
a lot of the other victims, they had wives and families that were after, you know, help or some sort of investigation over their loved one, and they didn't receive that support. So it's not just a case of whether they weren't reported missing or they didn't have family in the country to be able to pursue this, because there were victims that did have that and they didn't gain the same support that the other victim with his friends rallying around and making a bit more activity around it. But yeah, it doesn't sit right.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's understandable for people to ask questions on that.
Yes, yeah.
Secondly, the police also received flak for victim blaming after Police Chief Saunders said this quote, "We knew that people were missing and we knew that we didn't have the right answers, but nobody was coming to us with anything." And Saunders was widely criticised about that as a consequence.
Nobody came to... because he took them without anyone knowing. And isn't that his job to do that? I don't know. I feel like
you said before, there were people saying some stuff, like wives and things like that. It wasn't like there were a thousand gay men that knew that what was going on just because they're in the community. It's people were raising questions in the community about people going missing. The first victim was a friend of Bruce MacArthur's and a friend of others in the community. People were asking questions, but it didn't. Yeah. It just fell on deaf ears. And I think there's always a bit of apprehension around the police, especially if you're a minority. So,
Yeah, absolutely. I just felt, it just seemed a really odd statement to say, like, putting it, no one came to... They did come to you, but also it's your job to investigate it. It's your job to go and ask those people's questions. Go and talk to people and try and find this connection.
Yeah.
And not great police work. And they interviewed him as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting. I hadn't heard that case before. So harrowing, so tragic, and there is that frustration that he got away for so long, and maybe there could have been opportunities for it to be stopped sooner, maybe, and just so tragic for so many levels. So many people were pulled into this case, and horrific. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that case. It was good, and yeah, that one's going to get me thinking. I'm going to look into it a bit more as well. But thanks for doing that one.
Do you want to talk through the socials in case anyone wants to give their take on the case?
So you can send your true crime or paranormal stories and case suggestions to our at www.goreandguiltypodcast.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at goreandguiltypodcast. Or follow us on Twitter at Gore and Guilty. We would greatly appreciate any reviews or stars if you feel so inclined. And we hope that you enjoyed this episode. And thank you so much for listening. We do really, really appreciate it. And remember, we won't judge if
Gore is your guilty pleasure.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Woo! Bye!